Do you know who made this statement? The world looks at me as a football player who is a Christian, but I look at the world and say, I am a Christian who happens to be a football player. We've been talking about quarterbacks this morning, and this is Tim Tebow's statement. He was speaking to 26,000 people at Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego, and there were several people who were interviewed after this speech, and Sharon Cox was one of them, and she said, he loves the Lord so much, there's no embarrassment when he falls to his knees. No embarrassment. What a great statement. That's high praise for any Christian. Not to be embarrassed to be a Christian. Not to be embarrassed by any criticism that you might receive. Not to be embarrassed to bow your knee and to thank the Lord publicly. Not to be embarrassed to say that your strength comes from God. Then we have the words by 19th century Danish philosopher Søren Kierkegaard. He says, now with God's help, I will become myself. With God's help, I will become myself. Without God's help, you will never become who you are meant to be. And the life's hardest question is, do you know who you are? Do you really know who you are? Until you do, you never know where you really fit in and what your role is in this world. Well, now we go back to the story of Joseph. In the previous episode, we saw him betrayed and almost killed by his brothers, thrown into a pit, and they laughed about it, and they brought back his coat of many colors, stained with blood, so his father would think was killed by animals. He's far from home. He was sold to the head of the Egyptians' palace guard, Potiphar. He's a slave. His father thinks he's dead. Well, there's one fact that gives us hope. It says that the Lord was with Joseph throughout all this time. It makes all the difference in the world. This is the story of Joseph's battle with sexual temptation. We'll see how Potiphar's wife does everything that she can do to seduce this fine-looking young Hebrew man. And we'll see how Joseph was able to use the power of God to resist her advances. The British playwright Oscar Wilde said, I can resist anything except for temptation. His own life proved truth to those words. But C.S. Lewis, the famous Christian writer, says, no man knows how bad he is until he tries to be good. Temptation is not new in any sense. It hasn't changed. It started right away in the beginning of this creation in the Garden of Eden. It's subtle, it's crafty, and temptation is the seductive. Satan tempts us the same way as he did Eve and Adam in the garden. He tempted Jesus in the wilderness even, didn't he? He came to Jesus and tempted him when he was out in the desert for 40 days. From the very beginning, from the earliest days of humanity, battle has raged for the soul of men and women. Temptation has battled for our hearts and our souls. What exactly is temptation? Well, here's a good definition I found. It says, temptation is the inner urge to do wrong that hits at the place of our own personal weakness. Temptation hits us where we are the weakest. Temptation comes from the inside. It comes from the inside of our own souls. The urge to do wrong comes from inside of us. And it's not like in the words of Flip Wilson said, the devil made me do it. No, the devil didn't make you do it. There's no excuse for that. It's not some irritating relationship, but it's something that we did ourselves. So we can't blame it on our grandparents or our DNA or on our upbringing. It's also, no one makes us sin. It's what we do on our own. 1 Corinthians 10:13 has an interesting statement. It says, God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. And I will add to this, if you walk with the Lord and be, unlike the story of Joseph, it results in having the Lord with you. God will always help us to face temptation and overcome it. If we walk with him, if that's our daily walk, we are then prepared. It's just like the football players. If they didn't work out every day and practice and go through the routines and the drills, they would not be able to play the game. So we need to play the game of life by walking through with God every day in His Word and talking to Him. Well, this story of Joseph has some five basic principles I came up with. Number one is, when things are going well, be on guard. When things are going well, be on guard. The scene is the royal court in Egypt. A man named Potiphar enters the room. He is the captain of Pharaoh's bodyguards, and he has with him a fine-looking young man. Not an Egyptian. He doesn't look like an Egyptian at all. You would say, I wonder where he came from. He was tall in comparison to the Egyptians, well-built, with medium brown hair and a casual walk of a person who is very self-confident. A young man who is very self-confident. Do you know why? Because out of 12 siblings, he was chosen and favored by his father. His name is Joseph. Well, Potiphar had purchased Joseph from a slave from the Ishmaelites. So they couldn't be father and son, even though they worked together and they loved each other very much. But they didn't seem like master or slave either. It's a kind of a relationship that transcends culture and race. Well, here's the way Moses puts the matter in Genesis 39:2. The Lord was with Joseph and he prospered, and he lived in the house of the Egyptian master. When his master saw the Lord was with him, and the Lord gave him success in everything that he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household and entrusted everything in his care. So Potiphar had great confidence in Joseph. He was no dummy because he saw that Joseph walked with the Lord and had power from the Lord. Notice what happens when Joseph takes over. From the time he put him in charge of his household, it comes from verse 5, and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and the field. This changed the game. Joseph came into Potiphar's house and changed everything. Everything was thriving. Five times in Genesis, God mentions how God blessed Joseph. There are two things we ought to learn from this. First of all, lost people are not stupid. They may be lost in their sins and their spiritual confusion, but they can see the hand of the work in a believer's life, and that's why you are out in our community. People see what you do. People know what you do. Others will see it. Maybe they don't understand the Trinity, the concept of the Trinity. Maybe we have trouble understanding the concept of the Trinity. Maybe we don't understand entirely about justification by faith alone. But lost people don't understand the finer points of doctrine, but they know when they see a believer. And they also can spot a phony a mile away. And they can recognize God's hand in the work of a believer's life. And people have said this to me. We were playing bridge the other night at a friend's house, and our friend, the lady, said, Betty, you know, you're not like a pastor's wife, are you? And I said, thank goodness. The traditional concept of a pastor's wife is not what Betty is. Betty is her own self. Because she's often said to me, how do I learn to be a pastor's wife? I said, you don't. You just do what you do. That's all you have to do. That's the important thing. Potiphar may have followed a pagan religion, but he understood that Joseph was different and respected for it, and so is Betty different, and she is respected for what she is. Secondly, there's no contradiction between God's blessing and our temptations. In fact, we are more apt to be tempted when things are going really well, when the road is smooth, when the hills are flattened out, when things are really going well. You got everything together, all of a sudden, watch out, be careful, take guard, keep your eyes open. Today's victories very often lead to tomorrow's trials because that's the way the devil gets into our life and changes it and challenges us and hurts us. Principle number two is remember when you're tempted, remember who you are. Well, Joseph seems to be sitting on top of the world, doesn't he? The house of Potiphar is going well. The crops are coming in. Potiphar is making good money. Joseph has everything under control. And a new character enters the story. We don't know her name. I try to find out what her name is, but there's nowhere, no documentation to that at all. We think that it was probably a marriage for political purposes. She was a married single woman in those days. Verse 7 lays out the situation for us in unabashed directness. After a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." And all of a sudden, the story gets an R rating, doesn't it? Well, the Hebrew language has a wonderful way of putting it. Literally, it says, she lifted her eyes to Joseph. In other words, she made eyes at Joseph. And as he crossed the room, she followed him with her eyes. A smile of satisfaction. A young man, strong, not in the way, maybe the way Potiphar was 20 years ago. But he is a very strong, good-looking young guy. He looked like a good companion for a casual affair. A brief meeting with no strings attached. A younger man and an older woman. She must have been persistent because Joseph turned her down and she came back again and again and again. A slave doesn't say no to a woman of high esteem because that could get you in trouble. She thought that maybe she could wear down his resistance, but still he said no. He was loyal to his boss. He said to her, "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in the house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing against God?" And he knew that adultery was wrong. He knew that a wicked thing was going to happen if he gave in, and that sin wouldn't be against God. In those days, and today we try to rename sin to make it sound less sinful. We use the word, instead of adultery, we use affair, tryst, fling, one-night stand. Call it what you like, but Joseph knew exactly what it was. Despite his flat refusal, she continued to try to seduce him day after day. She was persistent. And finally, she made her move, and the story moves on. One day, he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants were inside. Prime opportunity. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." "So what do you do now?" She's grabbing him, pulling him down, and it's the moment of truth, and when a person knows that they belong to God, then decisions are easier, aren't they? If you belong to God, you can't sleep with the boss's wife, that's for sure. It doesn't matter if she's lonely or seductive or attractive or anything else, you just can't do it. Period, it's the end of the story. No discussion, because God is with you and you know exactly. Joseph didn't mess around. He didn't flirt with trouble. He just said no. And he didn't apologize for saying no. So the third principle is, when you're tempted, act fast, and he did. He left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the room. Well, he could have made all kinds of excuses, saying, "Why not? You know, I'm alone. I'm a slave. I do what she wants. I deserve this. And everybody fools around. And God will understand." Well, that's not true. But she said, "Why don't you stay for a while?" And Joseph said, "I can't, I gotta run." And that he did. He ran out of the house, over the hedge, dodged the camels in his underwear. King James Version uses this quaint expression to explain how Joseph left the final seduction. It says, he left the garment in her hand and fled and got him out. That's interesting. And got him out. He got himself out of the trouble. You got to make up your mind in advance what you're going to do. It's too late to pray when the temptation is overwhelming you. When you're ready and strong, then you're in charge. There's a time to talk and a time to stop talking. There's a time to stay and a time to go. There's a time to walk and a time to run away. And that's what Joseph did. As Kenny Rogers sang, you've got to know when to hold them, you've got to know when to fold them, and know when to walk away and know when to run. Sounds like Joseph's theme song. When temptation comes, you've got to move fast, no hesitation, and that's what Joseph did. You know, God says, and he's not going to tempt you more than you can bear, but he's not going to give you 2 and 3 chances. He gives you that one chance. Well, as you can imagine, Potiphar's wife wasn't too happy. Hell hath no fury than a woman scorned. Isn't that the old saying? Well, she makes a false accusation. She says, this Hebrew, with a little racial overtones, was trying to rape me. Her words sound fuzzable because here she is with Joseph's coat in her hand. And the Bible says when Potiphar heard the story, he got really angry. He said, Joseph betrayed me. He had him thrown into jail with common criminals. Joseph was lucky he wasn't executed. How could such a thing happen? That's why Joseph was locked up. His reward was a quick trip to jail. The good news is that, like Joseph, we can all stand up to temptation, but sometimes there are consequences, aren't there? The bad news, sometimes you can lose your popularity as a result. After all, look at this. The world crucified Jesus for standing for him talking about being the Son of God. Why should we be expected to get off any easier? But the final principle is, when you do right, God will honor you. That's so important. God will honor you, just like he honored Joseph. Let's see how the story ends. It's not the way we might have expected. The Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Here is Joseph, chained in a filthy pit, and he all of a sudden becomes the top dog because of his faithfulness to God. He lost his job, he lost his freedom, he lost his reputation. He appears to be a ruined man. But God honors those who dare to say no. It may not appear that way at first. It might be painful. It might be embarrassing. It might be difficult. But in the end, we will never be disappointed. Sometimes we feel in our life that life has thrown us a prison in which we are trapped. Look to Joseph. He was in the midst of a prison. In the midst of that hell, even in that prison, he prospered because God was with him. So if we are in prisons in our life, whatever they may be, we can still prosper. Look to the Lord, and eventually he will give you success in all that you do. Well, sometimes the worst thing that can happen is to be in the prison of a guilty conscience because you couldn't say no. The 4 great don'ts are: don't forget who you are. Don't be surprised when temptation knocks on the door, because it will with every single person here. Temptation will knock on the door. Don't be deceived by persuasive voices. Don't be confused by immediate results. Just say no. If we're going to be victorious over temptation, we must do what Joseph did when Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him. Just say no. When you're tempted to do wrong this week or next week or any day, just say no. When someone says, come with me, do this, it can't hurt anything, everybody else does it. Leave your coat behind, run the other way, and just say no. When your mind plays tricks on you and says, go ahead, no one will see you. You know, we're alone, there's nobody else around. God sees everything, and just say no. When you find yourself down and out against the wall and under the pile and nothing is going right, nothing works, and you're hopelessly entangled and you see no way out of a mess that you're in, before you say or do something that you shouldn't, just listen. God still loves you and gives you the power, and just say no. In the end, it comes down to a simple question. Christian, do you know who you are? And here's my whole sermon in one sentence, which I should have said in the beginning of the sermon because it's too cold in here. One sentence is the whole sermon. If you know who you are, you can serve Christ anywhere. If you know who you are, you can serve Christ anywhere. And do you know who you are? And that's part of the process. So now, Joseph is in prison and is about to get some company. So you won't believe who shows up with Joseph in prison. Stay tuned. The story is far from over, and it continues next week.